Moving on to out of nowhere, Charles Fort. I mean, this guy, you know, everybody who listened to this program would know his name because, right, you know, he's legendary in the field. But I learned so much about him in this chapter of yours. The first one, the biggest surprise is the sense of humor that he had. Because he, you know, he took it seriously, but he had fun with it. And the second thing was how hard he worked at it. You start off by describing how he would dig up some of these cases and instances. Tell me about that.
Well, again, I mean, this is the surprise, I think, both for me. Well, there's a lot of surprises for me here, too. One is that after studying religion professionally for 25 years, I had never heard of this guy. And what happened was a dear friend and good colleague of mine named David Hufford, who studies, by the way, supernatural occult traditions, read something I wrote years ago and said, "Well, Jeff, you sound a lot like Charles Fort." And I said, "Who the hell is Charles Fort?" And so I went and looked this guy up and read his books, and I was just stunned. I was stunned by how smart he was, what a great writer he was, and how funny he was, but also how serious a researcher he was. Basically, what he did is he went to the New York Public Library for decades, every afternoon, and read every single newspaper or journal in French or German back to 1800.
Oh, man.
I mean, and then what he would do is he would isolate these, what he called damned facts, and he would write them on little slips of paper, and he would then classify them. He had hundreds and thousands of shoeboxes in his apartment, and he had them all marked with numbers and letters, and he would take these little slips of paper and he would put them in the right shoebox depending on what the story was. And after he did this for decades, he then compared those, put them into a book form, and he started publishing his books.
And was he successful financially in a popular sense off the bat?
No, not at all. The only reason he was published is because he had a fan named Theodore Dreiser, who was a very successful novelist and very well-known American literateur. And Dreiser basically threatened his own publisher that if he didn't publish Fort, he was going to take his books elsewhere. And so his first book came out in 1919 called The Book of the Damned. It's probably his best, certainly his most famous. But he met with no literary success in his life. He and his wife, Anna, managed to live a very simple life, mostly in the New York area, because literally a rich uncle died and left him an inheritance. But before that, Anna and Charles lived in abject poverty. I mean, at one point, Charles was breaking up the furniture to put in the fire to keep him warm.
Seems to me that the thing that jumps out at you for people who needed something to jog their memory about Charles Fort is the writing about things coming out of the sky, fish and frogs and strange raining of different creatures and things of that sort. He had a pile of those, didn't he?
Right. He was obsessed with fish falling out of the sky, which is really funny if you think about it.
And does that qualify as a supernatural or paranormal, or are there pretty good explanations for that stuff?
Well, gosh, I don't know. For him, it wasn't just the fish falling out of the sky. It was all sorts of stuff falling out of the sky. And, you know, Fort had some wonderful ideas, some profound thoughts, but he also had some just crazy ideas. And one of his crazy ideas was that there was land just a few hundred miles up there. So, I mean, he wasn't always right by any means, but he had a knack for latching on to these crazy events that would appear in the newspapers and then showing how the religious authorities and the scientific authorities would ignore them or dismiss them or, as he said, damn them. That was his technical phrase.
And he would, of course, was interested in, you know, applying some of these wild stories to evolution, mixing the two together into it. And this, I know this sort of fits into one of your interests, and that's in like X-Men and superheroes. And I guess we could say that Fort is sort of the father of super whatever, supernatural, super.
That's right.
He used that word a lot.
That's right. There's one paragraph in that chapter where I just collect all of his supers, and there must be There must be 30 or 40 or 50 of them. He loved the adjective super, and he definitely believed that these paranormal powers were gifted to us by evolution, and that we've lost a lot of them because we don't have particular need of them now, but that they could come back if we need them again. And he did not believe, however, that evolution was random. He was not a Darwinian. He believed that evolution had a mind of its own, as it were, and that there was an intelligence woven into nature, and particularly evolution.
Super bat, super biology, super dragon, super evil, super Hibernia,
yeah.
Super Niagaras, a super ocean, super magnets. There's the
I
list goes
there's
on.
There's also
and on.
Super whiskey and super Bibles, and I mean it just goes on and on and on.
Sounds like he could write for the Weekly World News or something.
Charles, I'd have him write for anything. You know, he made his living before he wrote these four weird books. He made his living as a humorist, writing for magazines and newspapers. So that really comes out, actually.
I mentioned about the X-Men, and you've written about that sort of, I don't think it's in this book, but I remember seeing it something online that you had had an interest in evolution and the possibility that maybe humans evolve into something like the X-Men with superpowers. That sort of fits into the Fortean world, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It also fits into Myers, because remember, Myers believed that evolution was what was creating these powers. He called them supernormal, by the way. Myers believed that we were evolving from the normal to the supernormal. So there's that word super again. And I am. I'm currently writing a book on the paranormal in popular culture. And one of the themes I'm looking at is what I call the myth theme of mutation, which is this essentially X-Men notion. The X-Men are simply one example of it. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of examples that go all the way back to the 1860s. But Myers and Ford are two of the earliest, and I think two of the most sophisticated.
One of the central themes that he developed and that you write about is this three eras or dominance.
Right.
The three dominants. What is that?
Well, this is where I think Ford gets really, really sophisticated, and this is where I think he's maybe underappreciated by his fans. He believed, and this is where he begins to sound a lot like frankly, a historian or a philosopher. These three dominants were, he believed that in different eras, there's a different dominant. And every dominant has to damn whatever doesn't fit into it. So essentially, every era, there's some kind of cultural system that claims to be the truth of things. And whatever it can't explain or doesn't fit in, it damns by, you know, ignoring it or sometimes actually persecuting it or censoring it or whatever it was.